VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. The Pentagon said on Thursday that there are a lot more U.S. troops in Syria than previously disclosed, and they've been there a while. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The U.S. had been saying there was no change to force numbers in Syria amid the Assad regime's fall, insisting 900 troops were there. Now,
there are approximately 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria.
Major General Pat Ryder says it's a temporary boost to help U.S. operations against the Islamic State group. How long have they been there?
It would probably be fair to say at a minimum months.
The revelation comes weeks before Donald Trump's return here to the White House. He tried to withdraw U.S. forces from Syria during his first term and says he does not back more getting involved there. Sagar Magani at the White House.
U.S. President Joe Biden will travel to Italy next month to meet with Pope Francis and top Italian officials for what is expected to be the final international trip of his presidency. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said Thursday that Biden will meet with the Pope, Italian Prime Minister Giorgio Meloni, and President Sergio Mattarella during the January 9th to 12th trip. Biden is a practicing Roman Catholic and last met privately with Francis earlier this year while in Italy for the Group of Seven Leaders meeting. He also met with Francis at the Vatican in 2021 when they had a wide-ranging conversation about climate change, poverty, and the coronavirus pandemic. Overseas visits this late in a U.S. presidency aren't typical. The last president to travel overseas in the final month of his presidency was fellow one-termer George H.W. Bush, who traveled in early January 1993. This is VOA News. President Vladimir Putin has boasted that his military operation in Ukraine has strengthened Russia and denied that the downfall of a key ally in Syria has dented Moscow's prestige. The Russian leader sought to project strength and ease at his annual news conference and call-in show Thursday. He used the tightly choreographed event to reinforce his authority and demonstrate a sweeping command of everything from consumer prices to military hardware. Moscow's forces are advancing at their fastest rate since 2022, capturing village after village across the industrial Donbas region. Both sides are vying for the upper hand ahead of expected peace efforts next year. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman has more.
Ukrainian officials are urging Kiev's Western partners to help strengthen Ukraine's position by supplying more weapons and air defenses. But hampered by manpower shortages, Kiev is on the back foot in several sectors of the Eastern Front, where soldiers have described relentless Russian assaults. Moscow's forces are now just 3 kilometers from the strategic city of Pokrovsk, a road and rail hub whose capture would severely disrupt Ukrainian supply lines. Far from the trenches, meanwhile, Moscow is waging a campaign of airstrikes on critical infrastructure that is hobbling Ukraine's fragile energy grid as winter takes hold. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, who takes office next month and has criticized U.S. aid to Ukraine, has promised to seek a swift end to the war without specifying how.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. A court document filed on Thursday shows the suspect in the killing of an American healthcare executive, Luigi Mangione, is being charged with new federal murder and stalking crimes. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zelina reports.
The development came on the same day Mangione agreed to be sent to New York to face other state charges that had previously been announced by prosecutors there. Mangione waived his right to extradition proceedings in Pennsylvania, where he was arrested earlier this month. The federal prosecutors in Manhattan are charging him with the crime of murder using a firearm, 2 charges of stalking, and an additional firearms offense, according to a criminal complaint. Federal charges potentially allow prosecutors to pursue the death penalty, which has been outlawed in New York for decades. A grand jury in New York has already indicted Mangione on 11 counts, including first-degree murder and murder as an act of terrorism. The 26-year-old has been in jail since his arrest and has not yet entered a plea.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Friday, December 20th, and here are some of the stories we are following. Tanzanian opposition leader alleges a plot to harm him.
Police immediately responded by saying that they don't work on rumors, they don't work on personal feelings. In other words, they will not provide me with any protection or assurance as to my safety.
Liberian authorities released some protesters. Eliza Pack Project worked to stop the spread of medical misinformation in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Nigerians shall follow their travel plans over soaring fears and insecurity.
In this economy, with the way things are, if I travel, what will my children eat? I don't think any reasonable or anybody who is genuinely making his or her money will talk about traveling.
And Trump pushes for an end in the Russia-Ukraine war. Those stories plus Thompson O'Malley's force are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has announced $200 million in humanitarian aid for conflict-torn Sudan during his likely final trip to the United Nations while in office. According to the Associated Press, Blinken is capping his engagements with the U.N. after a tumultuous 4 years that saw war return to Europe and multiple crises in the Middle East. The deputy chairman of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party, Tundu Lissu, says he received credible information of a plot hatched against him. Lissu, who is running for the party's leadership against the current leader, Freeman Mbowe, in the third week of January 2025, said he learned he is in danger from a senior Tanzanian cleric, who in turn said he received the information from a credible source in the Tanzania Intelligence and Security Service. Lissu told me that according to the cleric, those who want to harm him plan to pin the attack on Chadema leader Mbowe as a good karma. Tanzanian government spokesperson Gerson Msigwa declined our request for a comment unless we provide what he called evidence. The Tanzanian Citizen publication quotes Dar es Salaam Special Zone Police Commander Jumaine Muliro as saying that Lissu has a constitutional right to express his views and that the police will take appropriate action if there is sufficient evidence of a premeditated crime. Lissu tells me that he wants to publicize the alleged plot before it becomes a reality.
It's coming from the Intelligence and Security Service, sir.
How do you know that?
Because that is precisely what I was told by the person who informed me of the plot. And this is a very senior cleric in Tanzania. He told me that the Deputy Director General of the Intelligence and Security Service approached him and told him that these were, some of the operatives within his department were plotting, and he thought it was madness. And he asked the bishop to, number one, make the information available to me, and number two, do whatever was in his power to expose the plot and put an end to it.
The article I'm reading says that the alleged perpetrators intend to implicate Chadema chairman, Freeman Mbowe. Why would anyone want to implicate Mr. Mbowe?
Oh, yeah. As it happens that we are currently going through intra-party elections, and I'm challenging Mr. Mbowe for the leadership of the party, and this election has led to a huge public interest, and therefore they are hoping that they will harm me and blame it on Mr. Mbowe. It would be a perfect karma, and they have done this before.
As you said, Mr. Lissu, that you are competing for the leadership of Chadema, is there any bad blood right now between you and Mr. Mbowe?
Well, I don't want to believe that there is any animus between us, but this election has raised a huge public interest. Our supporters are very active on social media. And sometimes you can't control some of these things. You can't control what people say. And the debate has been very, very intense. It has been very fiery at times. And therefore, And the media has painted a picture of a huge, rift within the party, and that has stoked the tensions. So it would be, at least that is what they think, it would be easy to harm me and blame it on my rival in an environment as charged as this.
Have you spoken to the authorities about this so-called plot?
Well, I have made it public, and the police were immediately responded by saying that they don't work on rumors, they don't work on personal feelings. In other words, and they said it fairly clearly, that they will not provide me with any protection or assurance as to my safety.
Tundu Lissu is the deputy chair of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party. He is now campaigning for the party leadership, and he spoke with me from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Authorities in Liberia have released some protesters arrested this week for taking part in the so-called White Tuesday protest. The police said the protesters were arrested for breaking security lines. Among those released is Sekou Kalasko, the former aide to former Liberian President George Weah. Kalasko tells me that he was released on bail and meetings, that he was arrested even though he did not take part in the protest, only because of his name recognition.
I was released based on a bond that was found by my lawyer to the government against some of the government actions against my arrest 2 days ago, alleging my involvement into a protest actions that could not be proven by the government. For the last few days, the first day that I was incarcerated, my lawyers tried to find a bond. The first insurance that they went to, they were directly instructed to not give them insurance bond. It was true. Another international insurance company that my bond, including several other, were part today to the government, and we were handed over to our lawyers for subsequent activities based on what the government could do to prove their actions against citizens that were peacefully, not saying me, citizens that were peacefully, because we were about 50 other persons that was arrested for the central prison.
Are you suggesting that you were arrested although you were not in the protest? Is that correct?
Yes, definitely. I was arrested not in the protest. I was arrested because my name is Kalasko. I was arrested because I'm the former aide to President George Weah. I was arrested because I have been strongly condemning the government actions against some of the unlawful actions that this government has initiated for the last 1 year plus since the inception of Mr. Boakai coming to the presidency. So basically, I was walking in the street. I went to park my vehicle to a nearby gas station because of the traffic congestion. And out of a sudden, I saw police pick up filled with gunmen running coming to me. And I said, "Oh, you're arresting." So I was asking, "Why are you arresting me?" They say, "Arresting." And they started hitting me with gun butts, carrying me to the police station in the eyes of other protesters that they arrested initially. Everything about people visiting me at the central prison was denied.
Mr. Kalasko, do you think, because the claim here is that this protest that was held, there's a belief that from the government side that the protest was scheduled at a time of heightened tension in the country, and that having the protest was an attempt to contribute or to flame that tension?
Mr. Bode, who determines when a citizen expresses themselves? Because our laws are very clear. We have the right as citizens. Liberians have the right to express themselves regardless of the circumstances, but in accordance with the law. It is guaranteed on our constitution.
When is your next court appearing, or this is it?
According to my lawyer, we were released, but we're going to be checking in at the court because, the government, first of all, has to present a case. Why those charges were levied against me? What can they proof beyond all reasonable doubt, because our law is very clear. It said beyond all reasonable doubt. What can they prove to justify their political witch hunt against me?
Sekou Kalasko is a former aide to former Liberian President George Weah and one of the released jail prisoners. He was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 20th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports.
As Christmas approaches, Nigerians in different parts of the country have expressed fear and worry over the possibility of traveling to visit family friends due to the rising cost of food and transportation and amid worsening insecurity.
Many Nigerians are bracing for a subdued Christmas amid skyrocketing prices of essential goods and services. Inflation continues to erode household incomes, leaving millions not able to afford traditional holiday celebrations. Food, transportation, and even basic communities are now beyond the reach of many families, casting a shadow over what is typically a season of joy and togetherness. A businesswoman, Chioma Eches, told VOA that her family will stay in Kaduna State this Christmas instead of traveling to their hometown in Owerri due to financial constraints.
Who is talking about traveling? In this economy, with the way things are, like if I travel, what will my children eat? I don't think any reasonable or anybody who is genuinely making his or her money will talk about traveling.
Gladys Uche, a civil servant in Lagos, also decried the rise in transportation, food, and insecurity.
The rate at which the thing increased is unimaginable. It's like triple the price we used to travel before. Coupled with the insecurity on the road, you're not even sure whether when you enter the bus from where I am here in Lagos now, are we even get to where I'm going to? And then food. Food is another case on its own because you have to carry food to the people you are going to meet there. And the price is over the roof.
Traders are also feeling the pinch. At some markets in Abuja, vendors report low sales despite large crowds that troop to the markets daily. A bag of rice, a staple during festive celebrations, now sells for an average of $80, up from $31 in 2023. The price of a 5-liter cooking oil, which sold for $4 in 2023, now sells for $15. Similarly, the price of cooking gas has doubled, making it difficult for families to prepare traditional holiday meals. The hike in fares also affected airlines, as fares have gone up due to increased bookings, and this has put financial strain on people who use the airlines to travel to meet their families or go for holidays. Chuks Chukwudi, a frequent flyer, laments that he can't afford to travel this season.
Honestly, the high cost of airfare this yuletide period is so alarming. Imagine someone like me that shuttles away an Abuja on an economy flight, paying about 267,000 naira. That is the equivalent of $172 on a one-way flight, not even return. The same fare I could pay 70 to 80,000 naira, about $45.
The economic downturn in Nigeria has affected not just individuals, but also businesses. Sadly, many Nigerians already living on tight budgets are now cutting back on festive spending. This is VOA News from Abuja, Nigeria.
In the city of Goma, a group of Congolese journalists are battling a flood of medical misinformation that can lead to tragic consequences. Reporter Zanet Neti Zaide has the story from Goma, the Democratic Republic of Congo.
These journalists working in Goma are fighting a flood of false information about war and disease in a region plagued by conflict and health care challenges. Fact checkers at the Congolese publication Eliza Fact fight misinformation like the myth that mpox, previously called monkeypox, doesn't exist and is merely scabies. Aline Kataliko says their work is vital to public health and building trust.
There are rumors about monkeypox that the vaccine is not effective.
Since 2021, the 25 journalists at Eliza Fact, including Joel Alimasi Kitambala, have been raising awareness about the dangers of misinformation.
appeler à chaque fois qu'il y a une publication qui parle de qui mentionne ce mot-clé-là. Nous avons des grosses complications sur toutes les publications concernant ces mots-clés. Et nous partageons ces publications avec la rédaction de l'équipe la publication, du moins l'information, mérite d'être vérifiée.
Elisa Facts articles are published on their website, shared on social media and broadcasts via local radio stations to reach those without internet access. A lot of the misinformation involves medical conspiracies similar to the one about mpox. Journalist Julian Kazimoto reported on misinformation about COVID-19 in these podcasts.
À Kinshasa, la ville où j'habite, j'ai constaté une réticence et une inconscience assez généralisée de catégorie de la population à s'inscrire dans la lutte contre le COVID-19, car beaucoup sont ceux qui ne croient pas à l'existence de cette maladie. Les plus dubitatifs se trouvent dans le périphérique.
Éditeur Daniel Makeke says these efforts are important in combating disinformation.
Nous sommes en collaboration avec certaines radios communautaires.
Radio stations,
parce que nous faisons une production de podcasts. La radio fait le relais de ces podcasts
qui fait
cette population-là
suivre
la maladie, l'épidémie et comment, par exemple, se faire traiter. Et quelle est la vérité derrière le traitement, par exemple, du mpox ou l'origine du mpox?
Makiki says Eleza Facts Project's efforts help prevent the spread of false news, which can have harmful consequences. Zanem Netizaidi, VOA Africa, Goma, Democratic Republic of Congo.
U.S. President-elect Donald Trump says the leaders of Ukraine and Russia should be prepared to make a deal to end the brutal conflict that has consumed Ukraine since 2022. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Washington.
President-elect Donald Trump says he'll try for a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine at the start of his next presidential term, and said both sides may have to compromise.
It's got to be a deal. It's got to be a deal. Too many people being killed. That is a war. That's too many. We've got to make a deal. And Putin has to make a deal.
He also called President Joe Biden's decision to let Ukraine lob long-range weapons into Russia stupid and a big mistake. The next day, Kyiv took the fight to the heart of Moscow, with Ukrainian security forces claiming responsibility for the brazen assassination of a key Russian general by a bomb hidden in a scooter and detonated just kilometers from Red Square. Analyst William Pomerantz said a future Trump decision to roll back support would have significant military consequence for Ukraine and could pit Trump against U.S. allies. Pomerantz formerly directed the Wilson Center's Cannon Institute, named for the Cold War U.S. diplomat credited for the long-running U.S. policy of containment, aimed at preventing the spread of communism after World War II. That policy led directly to the formation of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, a security bloc stood up to counter the Soviet Union.
I see a potential clash between our NATO allies and President Trump as to what is the future of the war. And quite frankly, when Trump talks about negotiations, it really means that Ukraine has to negotiate and surrender, as it were, but he doesn't really put any conditions on Russia.
The departing Biden administration is trying to spend every penny of available Ukraine security assistance before he leaves office. A National Security Council official explained why to VOA. Michael Carpenter, NSC Senior Director for Europe, painted Ukraine as the first domino that could tip and send the current world order tumbling down.
Ukraine is about the fundamental basis within the international system upon which everything else rests. That sovereignty, its territorial integrity, it's the inviolability of borders. If you don't protect that in Ukraine, you don't protect it anywhere.
Congress ultimately decides whether to keep money flowing into Ukraine's fight. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson to VOA.
I think that President Trump's election has already changed the equation there. I think he's the one that can bring that to a resolution, and we're looking forward to his leadership on that point. So we'll have to see.
Houston Democrat Erica Lee Carter, recently elected to serve the last few weeks of her late mother's congressional term, used her limited time in office to echo her mother's support for Ukraine.
I'm not counting out Ukraine until everyone in Ukraine stops fighting, and I don't see that happening until they win the victory.
Her observation highlights a significant issue, whether Ukraine is even ready to settle. Members of President Volodymyr Zelensky's government recently made the rounds, seeking support from neighbors such as Poland and from as far afield as France and Australia. When asked recently if he was ready to down arms and come to the negotiating table, Zelensky said he first needed to see security guarantees and a plan for peace. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning for you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with a visit of the Confederation of African Football President, Dr. Patrice Motsepe, to the nations that will host the CAF African Nations Championship 2025. The CAF president was in Tanzania on Thursday, where he visited the Benjamin Mkapa Stadium in Dar es Salaam, where he inspected its readiness to host matches in the CHAN competition. The CAF president is expected to travel to Kenya and Uganda on Friday, where he will meet with the heads of states and the football leadership in the two countries.
I leave Dar es Salaam with a lot of optimism and with a lot of confidence. There is still some work that needs to be done, but I'm absolutely confident that the work that needs to be done will be concluded before the end of the month, and we will be hosting the most successful CHAN.
Staying with football, FIFA has released its latest ranking, with Morocco ending the year as the highest ranked African nation despite slipping two places globally to 14th. While Morocco retained their continental crown, Angola emerged as the standout story of the year, achieving a record-breaking rise of 32 places to secure 85th position globally. Senegal, Africa's second-best team, holds firm in 17th place worldwide, while Egypt, third in Africa, is 33rd globally. Algeria comes in fourth on the continent, but 37th globally, and Nigeria wraps up the top 5 places at number 5 in Africa. The FIFA December rankings, the final list for 2024, saw minimal changes across Africa due to a lack of international fixtures in December. Paul Pogba's brother has been sentenced to 3 years in prison, 2 of which will be suspended after being found guilty in an extortion case that targeted the French man. Matthias Pogba will be able to serve his 1 year sentence with an electronic bracelet rather than behind bars. In March 2022, Pogba, who is set for a return to football after his 4 year ban for a doping offense was reduced, filed a complaint after he was kidnapped and robbed by 2 unidentified masked and armed men who demanded €13 million for protection services. In mixed martial art news, former two-time UFC middleweight champion, Nigerian-born Israel Adesanya, is set to return to the octagon in February. Adesanya will face Nasruddin Imamov in the main event of the UFC fight night at the AMB Arena in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, on February the 1st. The bout will mark Adesanya's first non-title fight since 2019, breaking a string of 12 consecutive bouts with the championship on the line. Finally, South Africa's Minister of Sport, Arts and Culture, Gayton McKenzie, has officially announced a bid steering committee to oversee the country's efforts to host the Formula One race in 2027, marking a potential return of the event after a 34-year hiatus. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, December 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. I'm here. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butler in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning.
The African diaspora has long played a vital role in supporting families back home. On the next edition of Our Voices, we'll explore opportunities for Africans in the diaspora to find financial success in their native countries, challenges they might face, and explore innovative platforms that are helping to bridge the gap. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.